But anyway, like, and even the governance problems and everything else could be worked out, right? Like, because if you think about, like, you wake up every day, you're like, okay, the sun's going to shine in the morning. So that's a rule. You know that periodically it rains, you know, periodically there's a hurricane, you know, periodically that there's a drought, you know, sometimes it's a hot day and sometimes it's a cold day, but the rules of the game are not decided by the human beings on this planet. So like, you know, you wake up, you go and you do your governance job, you work at City Hall, you work at the whatever, like the main rules of the game don't change on a day-to-day basis. Like if every so often an asteroid were to hit us, well, we can't really have governance, can we? Or like maybe if a solar flare were to destroy all of our electronics every week, well, then we wouldn't have a world with a lot of electronics in it, right? So the rules of the system sort of like ultimately dictate the underlying governance that happens. And I think like the way we have our systems right now, the like in Cosmos especially, it's just way too easy to change governance shit, honestly. Like it's still like, you know, people kind of vote for all sorts of stupid shit and then they you know, maybe it passes, maybe it doesn't. But like, you know, we don't vote for if the sun comes up tomorrow or not, right? Like it just does. So there's some level of immutability that's necessary to build this. And so that's a core feature, I think, that like in a system like this, I would favor. So your store of value token cannot be manipulated. What's that?
Go ahead. One of Jay's ideas that I kind of like a little bit is like this idea or this premise of like a supermajority. We need like 67% to change like critical core kind of parameters and values within.
Like, yeah, I would take that. I would take that a bit further in that, like, if you have the base tech finished, like we're not reinventing the sun every week, right? Like it just stays that way. Maybe it gets hotter one day, maybe it's colder one day, maybe it's seasonal, whatever. But the point is, we don't go and modify the sun every day. Like there needs to be that sun at the center of the cosmos that doesn't change, or the center of a game system that doesn't change, in order for people to build on that. Because remember, like, think about this. You have a coin, you have all sorts of parameters on the fucking thing, and then everyone else is playing a big video game. It's called DeFi. And like, you know, and you bought a bunch of token and you go and liquid staked it, you stuck it over here, you borrowed off of it, you did I don't know what with it, and you're expecting that thing to have a certain value and a certain base, you know, function. And then like, you know, everyone votes to fuck around with it. Guess what happens? Now your whatever positions you had are not what work, you know, and then now you're just waiting for like the dungeon master to go, you know, decide what the, you know, who is the so-called voting public to decide what the coin's gonna do. And then now you have to change all your positions and fuck with them. And maybe that impacts your taxes and who knows what else, right? So like, this is not good. Like you cannot be doing this to make a functioning economic system. The sun needs to shine and needs to shine like consistently, at least to some extent. And immutability is important. It's why a lot of people like Bitcoin, for example. It's immutable. It's mostly immutable. It's very hard to change. It's so like, I'm talking beyond what we're discussing, Rummer, as far as general governance. Like I'm saying like, the base game, the video game, should not really change. So like Jay's take is like, if you want to change Adam, then fork it and make your own fucking thing. Like that's his point. And I tend to agree with that. Like you can't build systems where you change them every 5 minutes and you're doing like composability and shit with them, right? Like imagine if Windows were to say, oh, you know, we're not really going to run on this anymore. We're going to use like Linux, whatever. And all the developers are like, wait, what? And that can happen at sometimes. Like Apple went to M1, M2 chips, right? And like all the developers for Apple had to switch over. Apple was big enough that all the developers said, okay, fuck it, we'll go and start building on M1s or whatever. And they changed their, you know, they changed their architecture of their all of their software because you can't run it no longer on the Intel-based Macs, remember? And that happened, but you don't want that to happen very often. And if it happens in a gigantic way, your ecosystem better be like ready for that kind of shift, or your stuff doesn't work. So yeah, like a full migration, like think about this, the M1, M2 architecture for Apple was a fork of the original Apple hardware, right? Like you can't put any of the old shit on the new stuff straight away. Actually, that's not entirely true. They actually put software so that you can, it'd be cross-compatible, but you get the point. Like it's basically a hard fork at that point of their total ecosystem. To some extent. And I think you don't want to have that happening on a routine basis if you're kind of trying to base a monetary policy around things. So I like, you know, what is the right interest rate or whatever parameter? I don't know. But like, that's what's interesting is that if you make a system where instead of governance chooses that, the game participants choose that, that's a very different thing. And especially if it's a game that is not so easy to manipulate. And speaking of manipulation, the game should actually be robust enough to where if people want to run bots, that's fine. No problem. Right? The more bots, the better. If you don't have a system that's robust to bots, you've already fucked it all up anyway. It doesn't matter. So like video game companies try to solve for this in so many different ways. But really what they should be solving for is like the assumption that bots will be in play. And how do you make the game interesting to the human user, even if there's bots going on? And that's an important dilemma to solve as well. So there's a lot to think about, Barry, as far as like generating something like this. But if the goal is you want more transactions, then you very much want bots on your in your ecosystem. You want bots. You want lots of interesting shit to do on your ecosystem, so much so that people are willing to put bots on it. You know who? You know what ecosystem no bots come to? When there's no interesting shit to do, there's no reason to bot the ecosystem. So like the exact, you know, it's like a death sentence if bots don't want to come to your ecosystem, because it means that your ecosystem's stupid. Like that's kind of my theory. Like, you know, so. Like, look at KuCoin bots, for example. Look at grid bots. You know, who uses grid bots? You know, people want to counter trade various tokens, and they use the bots. Why? Because they believe in both the tokens that they are botting, and they don't mind having more of each of those using their profit. So that's why they bought those different coins. And if you look at the really, really shitty coins, people don't really bot those as much because nobody wants them. Right, like even if they're volatile, no one wants to take the risk. They don't want to bot them. So in a game like this, same concept. It's like whatever the game is, like it should be to your advantage if you use a bot. But there may be certain things, Ferry, like that a bot won't be able to anticipate. Right, like if there's an AI actually running part of the dungeon master of the game, and says you have to do certain tasks at a certain time, and maybe only a human can actually do them properly. Then that may actually have some anti-bot capability to it as well. So like there's certain things you'd want to do that encourages bots, and certain things part of the game that like you don't want to encourage bots, because otherwise the human players don't have fun. It's like playing like chess against AI all the time. If you're going to get your ass handed to you, eventually the human players get bored and like, well, like there's no advantage for me to do this. But in the end, if the base currency's goal is to improve decentralization and like improve as a store of value, then bots should be part of how that happens, because bots bring liquidity, they bring transactions, and the only people that are going to bot something is if they feel like it's there's value to be extracted there.
Hey Steffi, I had a question about games. I don't know if you can hear me. Like with Link, like isn't a lot of this going to be kind of moot point? Like I know I've seen a lot of teams, they just spend so much money trying to build on-chain games, but basically one premise behind Link is going to be with CCIP and randomization and everything. Like you're just going to be able to tie that into existing like MMOs and games, right? So like all these companies that say they're going to compete against like the Blizzards and the Activisions of the world, like you're not going to get anywhere, because like coming down the pipeline is so much integration with like other sources like Link, right? Basically there's a lot of modules within Link that are going to help the existing gaming world combine with crypto, and everyone's trying to move towards having ownership of your skins and everything like that. That's I think we're only a couple years away from that. So I don't know, like I know there's a lot of hype behind like crypto gaming and everything like that, but really when the big boys want to get into it, they're gonna completely wipe out anything that's on the market now.
And bear in mind, the goal that I'm trying to set out is not to just simply create some sort of abstract game like a, you know, like a Dungeons and Dragons or like a Diablo 4 or something like that. The concept here is the game itself is, you missed probably a lot of the discussion, but the game itself actually bolsters the decentralization of the network and bolsters the primary store of value coin. That's the concept. So you use game theory to its fullest to sort of like solve some of crypto's problems, where the participants actually solve the problem through play, And that also creates the attention economy and all the other things of bringing new users. So it's a little bit different than what you're thinking of, which is like, well, like, Chainlink is going to do some cool stuff. Like, yeah, verifiable randomness, they're adding to their system. They're doing like some real world asset shit. They're doing kind of like, they're doing a universal gas token idea. They're doing CCIP, which is like an IBC like thing. So yeah, Chainlink's doing a lot of interesting shit. And a lot of that can, yes, be incorporated into all sorts of trading platforms, video games, whatever, for sure. But a system like this that we're talking about might benefit from Chainlink actually, in some of its like, some of the things I'm trying to accomplish, but this is not meant to be sort of like a competitor to that so much. This is just creating a very different sort of like wallet experience, I should say, where the game is just like a thing in and of itself, and it brings value to the chain and the base coin indirectly in a way. I'll give you an example of something that people have done this with. There's a app called Bee, and it's like a little app where like, and I don't know what happened to it finally. I'm not sure if it's still around. I have to look. But what it was like, you would log into the Bee app every single day and you'd click a button and you'd claim your Bee tokens. And as time went on, like the number of Bee tokens that get like distributed go down. There's like a halvening every so many tokens. And you like the new users can't get as many as the original users. And the new users tend to like send a referral link to their friends so that they can go and download the app and download free tokens. So the whole concept was proof of human, meaning like the more people that were clicking this button every day, like losers, and picking up this token, it showed that there was an actual human interaction happening. And therefore, like, this was a thing that, advertisers or whoever could, latch onto at some point as or who knows. Anyway, so the Bee token was like distributed in this way, and it was distributed with no monetization. It wasn't worth anything. And I don't know if they finally, stuck it on exchange. Might have to look here in a minute here, but let me see. But the basic concept was like the game was just simply claiming a free token. And let me see if I can find it here. I don't see it on CoinMarketCap, so I'm not sure. But the idea was like, okay, you then list it on exchanges, and then people could like speculate on the thing based on the number of people in the network, the number of users, and say, okay, what is that network worth in terms of users that are playing the game of downloading the Bee token? And so that was the idea behind it. It was a very fair launched concept. It didn't violate any rules like in the Apple App Stores or Google App Stores or whatever, because the token was just a game. It's like you just literally pushed a button and got free token. There was a blockchain element to it, but there was not any kind of like implied value to the token or anything like that. And that's how they distributed the token over years and years. And I don't know what finally happened with it. I have to see, download the app again and check. But like, I thought it was a funny little thing and played with it for a while, just as a social experiment. But this would be something like that, where the game itself and the token distributions, the little funny little tokens you get, and the development of games on top of it would lead to like growth of the primary chain. That's the theory, at least. So like the big intuition is like, you want to make it so that like all the world's people could play. And the barrier to entry maybe is like a web browser or a smartphone. Like you don't need much to play. And, but it's interesting enough, like how many people play chess or checkers, right? A lot of people play chess. Is there a high barrier to entry? Not really. Why do people play it? Well, it's because it's interesting and there's communities built around it or whatever. And there's like, it's a similar concept to that, except it forms the basis for a monetary layer, if that makes any sense. So like, we'll see. Cheetah, what were you going to say something?
Yeah, I was just saying, like, so you're worried about people automating it. Could you just institute a log scale process by like number of turns that person makes, is like the value associated with it is regulated by some log scale. So like, you can't just sit there for forever and wait for it to go up. Like if you had an exponential scale, but if it was log, then you're incentivized to wait a little while in between each.
I guess. Oh, I see what you're saying. Way. Yeah, there could be different ways to like, yeah, affect timing or like anti-bot it to some extent. But the other thing is like a lot of the actions may not matter if there's bots running. Like at the end of the day, it's like, you know, the fact that some people use bots, you have to figure out how to make it so that like you can live with your bot friends and be okay with it. Like the bots are actually helping the network, not harming it through their actions. Or you explicitly make parts of the game only doable by bots, right? Certain karma points you can get in the game are only possible if you do it that way. So there's different ways to play that, I think. Things that are more human-centric, things are more bot-centric, or some combination of the two, like where like maybe somebody develops a bot that you can go and deposit some of your, you know, Shiva tokens to, and if you align with their token thing, then you get part of their benefits of their botnet, right? So like the goal would be to like make sure that bots are integral to the game and not somehow going to break it. Yeah, Ferry, go ahead, by the way. You don't have to raise your hand.
No, I don't want to interrupt and be rude. But yeah, like I was thinking about something similar not too long ago. like with the game itself, right? Like, I don't know if you have experience with MMOs, right? So that's kind of where I specialize in a bit. Like in terms of playing, like probably over 10 years easily. But that's not the importance. Like, I don't know if you've played games like, I think it was Marvel, one of the Marvel games that like I got sucked into like recently, where I just started like dumping a whole lot of things. I was like, I'm going to be the best today. My guild has to be the toughest and whatever, right? And then you overcommit and then you realize like these guys are like playing 24/7 and you have a life, right? But that being said, like the way they had that mapped out, like for every interaction, it would be like a meta rotational interaction, right? So when I say meta rotational, like on the maps, it would have nodes. But if we back those nodes up by like something like, you know, actual validator nodes, and you can have events at those locations, or if you have the node represented as a location, it could work that way. But at the same time, also you have to like look at the other components of what interests people. But yeah, like that's like in a nutshell. Yeah, I think like
there's no question. Yeah. Like game theory, like is like there's a lot of human psychology and sociology and all that involved. You want to make it like sufficiently addictive, but not too addictive. You want to make people want to have fun playing, but not get bored of it. You want to make the objectives interesting, but not so final that like, okay, I finished this game. Like, so like, yeah, what is the, but I think money is a game in and of itself. And the acquisition of money is something that is a game for a lot of people, especially in crypto and especially in DeFi and stuff. And the idea that like you can optimize your position for the OHM token and get more of it is by itself like a reason enough for people to play. Like there's a monetary incentive, there's kind of like a fun incentive, there's kind of like a teamwork incentive, all the things that you think of in an MMO, except that like MMOs don't offer a money, and the reason they don't offer a, like the reason why MMOs generally don't want to incorporate crypto is because like they need specific systems that keep the game fun, and when you introduce money into a game, people start equating the video game items with real world money. They say, okay, I work as a plumber all day. I make $100 a day, and I'm going to go buy $100 worth of like video game skins. And so what happens is they end up like equating what their game assets are with what their real life work hours were. So a rich person's going to be able to buy a whole bunch of the thing and get rich in the video game, and a relatively poor person's gonna be like, I can't buy all that shit, I'm not rich. A video game should make everyone feel rich in a sense, or at least feel like they could become rich if they put the effort forth, right? So there's like an element of that as well. Like you, like how do you keep the newcomer from feeling like disenfranchised from the game is a tricky thing. And a lot of games have that problem, right? Like where either the game simply ends, or like, but look at the Bitcoin halving game. People are still playing it. The hash rate keeps going up. Miners keep coming along. They have the economic incentive. Then the meme of the halvening shows up every 4 years and everyone fucking goes crazy. And like, so that the halvening being like a at a specific block height was done on purpose because it was well described that like basically, you know, human beings want a event that they can rally around, like as opposed to like it could have been a smooth curve, for example, of reward, the way the rewards work. Like, why have a sudden shock to the system every 4 years or whatever the at a certain block height? It's because, like, yeah, humans need that shock to sort of, you know, break them out of complacency. And it also provides like a planning strategy for your mining and your the cost of your mining and everything else that is well known and everyone knows is going to happen. And that's a really, really exciting thing. Like, so that's kind of like the big video game of crypto is like Bitcoin halving is like when everyone comes together and like it's bull market time or whatever, right? Like, so the meme that comes from that is like can be replicated for sure. And it can be done in a game like this, I think. It doesn't have to be every 4 years necessarily, but it can be even shorter time frames. But yeah, you would have some like meta game that's like 4 years, and maybe a meta game that's even a 10-year time cycle, something really wildly long, that only like the absolute autistic obsessive nerd is going to, you know, win that part of the game, right? Like, so you can't have a game so silly that like, if you're hardcore, you should have some benefits to playing hardcore, right?
If only Sefi could credit me like with something like of monetary value instead of XP, like I would appreciate that.
Yeah, you'd be rich, huh? Like with all the video games you played.
I mean, like if I could go back now, like yeah, like I mean the grind, like that's what people want, right? Like instead of just grinding for XP, you grind for your assets, right? But you have to like exactly what you said, like benefit like the network itself, and everyone just gets happy because of like, and they'll want to spend more time. So you'll have like a better like premise to gauge like active usage and
yeah, like one of my thoughts is you'd just simply bring in an existing coin like Atom, and you could use that as the gas token for the transactions. So initially, you don't need the original token of the network to actually play the game, so that you can rapidly onboard liquidity, and you could just simply connect an Atom wallet and you're in. You don't have to do anything. Right, you don't have to go to a DEX. You don't have to do shit. And that's the other thing about this system is I'm firmly against the idea of needing DEXs for all this shit. Like your spigots and your little god temples will basically be the DEXs, so to speak, and liquidity will change hands based on either a mint burn mechanism or some other scheme that happens. And you don't need DEXs and all the other shenanigans in them in between, right? Like, so you want to reduce the security risk dramatically. By allowing you within your wallet to play within the game, not jump around doing all sorts of weird shit, going to DEXs and whatever else. I don't think any of that's necessary. I think all that's like can be just completely abstracted away or just done away with entirely by having schemes where you can trade tokens for actions. Like if you get 5 of this token, 3 of this and 4 of that, that will, Shiva is going to convert that to you to 1 Shiva token or something, you know, like, or whatever. And that exchange rate may vary by the day, and it might vary based on the signs of the moon or some shit, like, you know, who knows, whatever you know mechanic you want to put in there. But the idea is like the exchange rates for things are not necessarily all set by humans. They're set somewhat by randomness, somewhat by like schedule, whatever, and those things just kind of run, and then that's part of the game. Like following that and going, wait, how am I going to strategize this based on what's going to happen next week? And you don't want to make it so complicated. You want to make it simple enough where it's like you can log in, swipe your screen and go, okay, I'm going to get this, this, and this. I'm going to push a couple of buttons. I need to go to there to get, you know, a free spigot of Shiva tokens today. And I'm going to go use that over here to get this mana or whatever. And I'm going to store it up because I need to like kill Dragon Y over here. And you know, you just like, so all of those systems would be very, very simple, you know, to do. And there'd be a lot of free tokens involved. Like you have all sorts of weird inflationary tokens in the mix. Like you'll have deflationary tokens, inflationary tokens, you'll have tokens that influence the yield of other tokens, you'll have, you know what I mean, like it's just a crazy mix of shit. And that's what people love about DeFi, is like playing these games, and they get bored of it in a bear market because they're not making any money. But in this case, the difference would be like we would like creating a system that's more up only, and where like when the transactions on the network are lower, you actually get more benefit from playing on the network, right? Like, so you would create a scheme where like there is no fucking bear market because like the lower the price goes, the more people want to fuck around and find out, as opposed to the other way around, where it's like, oh, the bear market's here, everyone's like bored and running away. Like crypto has fucked that up big time, right? Like that's like a, like the monetary, the system we've created in crypto where like we have this weird bear market, it's just absurd. It's just painful to watch it. It's so stupid. everyone gets depressed too. Like the devs get depressed, fucking everyone gets depressed and goes home. Like, I'm taking my ball and going home. That's how everyone acts. And then everyone all of a sudden shows up after 4 years, like as if something happened, you know, something exciting has occurred. Like, you know, while everyone else is like, oh, I'm accumulating or whatever. No, like we need a game for people to play where like during the bear markets, everyone's still fucking around with this thing and no one cares about the bear market at all because they're getting rich or whatever it is they're doing. You know, but it's also could be like healthy in a sense. Like you could create interesting rituals that happen. You know, you log onto your phone, you do this, this, and this, and it's like, okay. And you can't just sort of like, it teaches you patience because you can't just sort of like blow your load and like spend all your tokens on this today because that's going to affect your plan for tomorrow. So it's like, it's almost like it helps your mental health to have a system that is built properly, right? Like, as opposed to just the usual thing. Did my number go up today? Oh, I don't know. Like, so there might be like situations where number going down is actually advantageous to you for some reason. Right. That's where like Chainlink oracles and stuff could help. Like if the oracle prices of the primary coin actually affect the like incentives in the network, that could be super interesting. Right. Like as the price goes, the token goes down, you're incentivized to play a lot more, or like there's your actions have more meaning or something like that. And that could be fascinating too. Like some way to incentivize transactions is super important. Anyway.
Just thinking on that, like one idea. So like based off the, I guess you described three different communities within it, right? So having the collective of each community try to bet on the price of their deity representative. So like if you assign Bitcoin to one and Ethereum to another, and I don't know, something else to something else, having them assign basically like derivative value to what's going to happen with the price. So essentially they're buying options with these inflationary tokens. And if they get it right, then they have a multiplier, but most of them will get it wrong. Like we've seen with most options in regular finance, especially with retail traders. So you could get a deflationary aspect on the inflationary tokens in that sense. And it would provide insight and like incentive to go in and plunk around with the system for a long period of time, even in a bear market.
Yeah, even like you've seen how people have loved the game mechanics of like burn mint mechanisms and all that stuff. Yeah, every trick in the book that you've ever heard of could be implemented, right? Like to enhance the fun of the system. So yeah, the Ponzi-nomics, the pyramid schemes, the multi-level marketing, it's all of that, right? Like if you think of crypto, like there's no element of human behavior that doesn't get incorporated somewhere or another. There's the marketing people, there's the shillers, there's the like whatever, there's the SocialFi people, there's the YouTubers, the whole nine yards, like all of that should like play into the gamification of it in the end.
What chains are you thinking of? Because like I've got probably some decent people on ETH that have been building out some games. And
The theory was like this is tailor made for essentially a Cosmos chain, because you can create like easily spin up a Cosmos chain inexpensively, and you can also create shared security chains also. And the idea would be like there's three deity coins, which are the side chains, and the main chain is the store value coin, and that derives the value from the game play essentially. So yeah, you missed some of the longer discussion here, but like, yeah, there's a whole sort of architecture that I had kind of like thought up in my head based on what I've seen, how Cosmos works. And I think it's very doable, very buildable. And you know, it just has to be, the tokenomics has to be produced correctly to make it work.
What's the underlying contract language in Cosmos again?
The contract language is CosmWasm, but depending on the chain, like some people use Rust and some people use, I don't know what all people are programming on these days as far as like the actual languages. Fairy would know. Like Fairy, what programming languages are people using in Cosmos besides Rust? I think Golang and some different ones. It just depends on who you're trying to attract as far as developers, like to the thing, depending on what you make it in. But really, like the concept here is Cheetah, like once the base chain is made, you won't need to know how to program shit, because like the chains will actually be running And then you can build games on top of that by calling from, like interacting with those chains. So yeah, you won't need to know very much to build on top of them. So like the idea would be you're creating the dice and people are creating roulette, right? You're creating the chessboard and people are playing chess on it instead. So you can, you're creating basically a board game with a bunch of pieces on it, and people can play all sorts, build games on top of the monetary policy.
Right. And you can, the idea is that you can have like sub wins figured out as you go, basically, like, oh, if you capture that pawn over there, then that's worth X more than this guy over here. So it incentivizes people to move throughout the board freely.
Yes. Yes. So there'll be all sorts of incentivizations, especially for like improving validators as well. So the validators would be part of the game. Who you stake to, where you put your coins, whatever, are going to have impacts based on what you're doing in the game. So it's similar to, you know how we vote now? You take all of governance voting and you gamify the whole fucking thing. Essentially is what you're doing. Where you put your coins matter. Which temple you stake your coins to matter in the meta game of like achieving benefit to yourself, achieving benefits for your team, and then that indirectly benefits the decentralization of the network, which then brings value to the store core values token, which you know, you'd have to like create a system that like the inflation of that or the deflation of that token is related to the actions of the user. Say for example, the Shiva team wins, then the Ohm token, the core token, would actually you know, it would get burned, let's say, right? Let's say the Brahma team wins, which is the creator in Hindu mythology. So then the more of the Ohm token would be minted. So people that like the token for its inflation, because they want the inflationary rewards, are going to basically play on the Brahma team. And the people who want the Shiva team. And then there's another team, which is the immutability team, which would be like the Vishnu or the protector or the sustainer, as it's called, as it's known. And basically like that team would basically be like, fuck it, I don't want you to change anything. I like the Ohm token the way it is. So it'd be more for like, it would promote more the status quo, right? So you see how these game mechanics come together to like modify the chain parameters spontaneously. Is that cool?
Yeah, I really like it. I don't know if you remember, I reached out to you about like ideas of a rock, paper, scissors game a long time over the summer, and implementing it with like very basic level NFTs, and basically like you could use yours to capture some of another team's based off of the very basic intricacies of rock, paper, scissors. And I think this is like, it's kind of similar in the sense that you have three different teams, but it also drives the fact that you can have like change to win styles or win metrics implemented, which I think is very important. Because when we were looking at implementing it, one, fees on the network were just too high, and two, as soon as somebody gets to a win status, then the game is going to stagnate and no one's going to want to move.
Yeah, exactly. So you where the randomization happens is like weather events in the game, essentially, that like, you know, are going to be the big thing.
I like that. I guess I just wouldn't want to make it so random that people are incentivized to do nothing, which obviously can be changed and affected. You talked about like implementing AI to alter win states, so that way people are incentivized to continue the game moving. I guess you just have to get the value alignment of what that AI wanted to align with, I guess, the game never ending, basically.
Yeah, like, so for example, you might have an AI that does simple on-chain analytics, like what the validator set looks like, for example, and it decides arbitrarily to punish certain validators because, for whatever reason, they haven't, you know, got enough people to commit to, you know, staking with them or whatever it is, you know, like, so there's kind of like this, the AI is sort of like the judge, jury, and executioner at some level. Either you do it algorithmically or you make it more difficult than that by introducing randomness or just truly having some fun with it and having like a chat GPT call or something like that, that analyzes it and like just decides to roll the dice for you. So yeah, there's interesting things like that you could bake into it ultimately to like, yeah. But the core thing would be like the process of playing the game contributes to the decentralization of the network, and that's the core function of the gameplay outside of just having fun.
So is that, like, for these events, would it be like each team like has like a series of like choose your own adventure through governance, which would make them successful against each of these impending events, and then the reward would be the token?
Yeah, you could do it through the governance module in Cosmos. Yeah, you could definitely have parts of the game be that. And then, of course, you have to pay a transaction fee for that so that you don't, you know, cause spam on the network. But that could also be how you charge for the game. Like, you know, the transaction fees are actually, you know, how you participate. It's almost like putting a quarter at Chuck E. Cheese. You know, it's like putting a coin in the Chuck E. Cheese to play skee ball or whatever. Like, it's the same idea.
I'd vote for there to be like a chain extinction event based upon Holacracy. That would be fun to play.
It would be very similar to that. It would be like extinction events would occur. Like, you know, if it's like, you know, some random events that decimate one group are part of it, because you can't have one group always be more powerful than the other. So one of the biologic things that happens in life, like if you look at how the Earth's ecosystem works, is like periodically everything dies. Like there's actually is an extinction event or a lot of the world dies. And that's part of this. So you don't want people to sort of be sitting in a luxury position where it's like, okay, I just have my HODL bag and I'm going to sit there and watch it. That's not who this is for exactly, right? Maybe they'll hold the OHM token or the primary token of the game, but the goal of the game players is going to be optimized there. So like what would happen to the core token is the core token, the inflationary rewards from it would go to the people that are playing the most or winning the game versus like the burn mechanism, which is a slightly different thing versus, so like individually, you might have some benefits for playing. The team has benefits from playing. The network has benefits because from your playing, the transactions benefit the primary token somehow, et cetera, et cetera. So it's like all of these metrics are measurable, right? So it's easy to take on-chain metrics and turn them into things that affect the tokenomics and the parameters directly, which could be quite fun. But yeah, an extinction style event, like a gigantic hurricane that comes and rips through and destroys your wallet or whatever, like is part of the game. But here's the thing, like it's not so much how many tokens in your wallet you have. It is the proportion of them that matters. And how you get to those proportions could be quite difficult depending on how you play it. So it's not like you had to spend a lot of money to get these tokens. It's actually the effort required to play that gets you the right thing. But like, yeah, hurricane comes through, the gigantic storm comes through, you know, God, you know, Noah's flood comes through, whatever it is, and it destroys your position. You just have to plan around that happening. And maybe you have a way that you plan that. Maybe you have a second wallet you have that you've done with a different deity or something, right? Like, so there may be ways that you're going to get around certain types of events by kind of playing more of the game or making friends. Like maybe it's only the Vishnu people that can protect you. So if you have enough Vishnu people in your collective, then they can put up a shield to like, you know, maybe mitigate the effect of the storm before your dragon hunt or something. So like, you know, so there's a benefit to interacting with other teams in a positive way, not just in a PvP way. Like historically, like when I played EverQuest in World of Warcraft, I tend to prefer the player versus environment games versus the PvP. It's much harder to balance PvP in video games. But PvE, like everyone can get on board and have fun and like support each other somehow. These things automatically, when you put a monetary element, have a PvP piece to it. But I think a lot of PvE where the teams communicate and benefit each other is really cool. So like, it's like, okay, in order to beat the dragon at the Havening in 4 years, we're going to have like, you know, all three teams are going to have to come together to kill this thing or it's not going to die. And it's going to decimate everyone's wallets and it's going to inflate OHM into like, it's going to 2x the OHM inflation if everyone doesn't get their shit together and like play, right? Like, so you can create some like catastrophic events that if everyone doesn't get their shit together, like meteor strike style, and build missiles and, you know, it'd be like Armageddon, the movie or whatever. Like if you can't all get to the meteor and like blow it up, then you're all fucked basically. So that type of thing is kind of what I envision as well. Calamities and catastrophes, extinction, exactly, Milo. So you hit the nail on the head of what I was getting at. Because this prevents like Sybil things where like, you know, just because you have enough of one token, that doesn't guarantee you're going to win. Your ability to team with other people and everything else does matter at that point.
You know what I think this would be great for is this would be a great way for training and then a way to gate like a token launch. You know, you have all these other ways for, you know, collect your airdrop, you go to change this wallet and do all this other things. And even, I guess, earlier on when Coach was talking about, you know, making sure you got like your big brain NFT, which would allow you to kind of be gated for the next new token launch. I think that would be, you know, if you have people or a community that's willing exactly to play a game for two or three years, then they are given a reward NFT saying like, okay, this fucking guy is in it to win it. So you're allowed to actually, you're whitelisted for this new token and nobody else is. So it really levels the playing field.
That's exactly what this is. The idea is like, there will be all sorts of rewards like that, that you can imagine. They might not be fungible, but they might actually impact the performance of your wallet against certain types of things, right? So like, this is where like shields and weapons and things come into play. It's like, you have acquired the sword of whatever, you have acquired the shield of whatever in a sense, and it's because you did certain actions and that bolsters your wallet. And it's kind of like the paper doll idea in a role-playing game where, you know, you acquire swords and weapons and shit. It's a similar concept, I think, would play out here, but you wouldn't want to make it so that like owning those things was impossible to get to in the future. But it might be like, there might be some OG features like, oh, I have the OG shield from first generation. And it's like, it's 20 years later, you're just like a badass. Cause like, oh, Milo has the OG shield or whatever. You know what I mean? Like there's sort of like a street cred that comes with it. And that kind of credibility in DeFi and in crypto also kind of creates a system of like, oh, that guy's been around for a while. He knows what he's doing. It's almost like if you have a, you know, Galactic Punk or whatever, you know, Ether Punk or whatever, I forget the fucking thing's called. Anyway, the point is like, there is a bit of an NFT angle to it as well, I think. It's easy to incorporate that part into it, I think, comparatively. But this is not one of those deals where it's like, you have to pay for a certain NFT in order for you to, in order for you to play the game. I don't like that idea. Like, pay to play is just stupid. It's not scalable. It doesn't work. And it makes it like new people don't want to play because it's like it costs $20,000 to buy a star out of a spaceship or something. It's just stupid.
But I think it would attract a lot of people if you had like different kind of games where, you know, there would be some games where you win just by brute forcing, not by individually, but as a team, being able to brute force another team. But you could also have different psychological games where like everything is different, right? So it would always change.
Exactly. Yeah, there'd be a lot of things that are either scheduled, there'd be things that are programmatic, there are gonna be things that are random. And not only that random, but like the magnitude of the event might be random. Like, you might know that there's a hurricane coming in a month because you can see it on the radar. In a sense, like it's announced hurricane's coming in 4 months and there's a little countdown that shows that it's coming, but you may not know the magnitude of a thing. So like, if you overprotect yourself, you might be wasting your resources. If you underprotect yourself, you might be not using enough resources. So those kinds of things prevent you from just simply botting the thing because you don't know all the parameters of what's about to happen. Right. So like, that credible randomness is important in how this programmatic stuff works. So on-chain randomness is a whole nother like area where Chainlink's worked on it. There's a chain on Cosmos called Noise, NOIS, I think.
Gelato? Was it Gelato?
Gelato also worked on it. Yeah, I think they use Noise protocol for theirs, but there's a chain on Cosmos specifically dedicated to randomness, believe it or not. Like, that's a thing. Like, so you can actually acquire a piece of data that is credibly random, that would not be predictable by anybody. There's some interesting things like that you could do. Or you could just use it from Oracle events, from real world events. You can use Chainlink and say, you know, based on how many hurricanes happened this year and on the real world, that's going to impact, you know, the magnitude of the hurricane that's going to hit you next year or something like that. You can do weird shit like that too. It depends on, like, it's kind of interesting actually if you tie it to real world events, because then people are like, oh, you know, like, it's tied to some oracle that I can follow, and like, people are then paying attention to, like, you know, the baseball team scores of, like, the, you know, the Atlanta Braves or something, like, and they're like, oh, if, like, the Atlanta Braves don't do well, then lightning's going to strike us all and kill us. Something weird like that you can have as well. Real world oracles bringing in game sort of events that produce, like, it's not random, but it's like kind of random. It's like not that different from being random, because you can't game that to your advantage, right? So yeah, any sort of like verifiable randomness is can be very intrinsic to a game that cannot be manipulated somehow.
I guess my were you ever around in like 2018 for like when the first kind of EVM games came out?
Yeah, like CryptoKitties and shit.
No, even like before. Well, I guess it would kind of coincide with that. But there was this team. It was like called Just Team, and their first product they came out with was like a total 3D pyramid. So it was a pyramid scheme where you bought tokens, but everybody that bought in, you would get a share of it, and then in and out, you could sell in and out of the pyramid, and it would create dividends. But there was actually a really cool game that they came out with next. It was completely psychological. It was called FOMO 3D. And what it was the clock started for the first 100 ETH going into the contract. There was a limitation of you could do only a maximum of like one Ethereum buy-in. And then it would open up after the first 100 ETH would go in. But it was an inverse scale of purchasing. So your one ETH at the beginning would buy you a lot of keys, right? But as more people bought into, then the price of the keys would go up. On the second part of it, there was a countdown clock. So whoever had bought the last keys was basically the owner of the whole pool of money, right? Which was a large sum of money. I think the first time it went around, it got up to like 33 or 34,000 Ethereum. So when you buy the keys, it resets the clock. The last person that bought the key holds the ownership of the pot. And then it was a 24-hour clock that would count down, right? So it got to the end where it was like 33, 34,000 Ethereum, and people were just botting it to buy one key at a time because it was so expensive to buy the one key, but they had to keep resetting the clock. Otherwise, the other person that held the key would own the pot. It was a pretty cool game. I thought it was pretty fun. And someone walked away with a large sum of Ethereum. But it was just like, it was something that was just kind of so simple. And it, when it first came out, it had like 3,500 daily active users on Ethereum. And it like basically completely crashed the network multiple times when everyone was like doing these flogging buys. It was,
yeah,
it
this is sort of what I was describing is like the primary chain in this case would be like, the where the Ohm token sits in my model, the core token would be on the primary chain, and the other chains would be like shared security chains. But the benefit of having all these chains is like you have a lot of throughput, so that you can't, like, it's very difficult to crash the network either through bots or otherwise, because you need a lot of throughput to make sure that like it can take on a huge number of gamers, right, like all over the world. But yeah, like the worst enemy of your success would be like, if you're able, you get so many people and so many transactions, you've incentivized that correctly, but now your network can't handle it. That would be a separate problem. So like, to me, Cosmos is uniquely qualified here because technically all of the tokens could also be turned into secondary chains as well. Or like you can go from shared security to begin with, and you can go to full on Cosmos chains if they become individually strong enough. So you may have like end up being like a dozen chains or more. And then the throughput would be able to handle the different sort of like sub games or whatever the hell you're producing on it to then. And then the whole concept is like everyone playing on all the different parts of the game indirectly affect the tokenomics of the primary token. So what happens is if you want to own the primary token, you can, but you don't have to own the primary token to like either win parts of the game or anything else. But it benefits you to own the token because like, you know, it's like the whole point of the network is to make the value of the store of value token go up, but not exclude new buyers from coming in. So this is the problem with like Ethereum or something like that. Like the more users there are, the more expensive the transactions get. And simultaneously, like So like the cost of block space goes up, and simultaneously, like the new user's like, fuck it, Ethereum's too expensive, I don't want to play. Like, I'm going to take my game to Zephyr over here where the market cap is, you know, 100 million or whatever, and I can moon my token to a lot higher price. So you want to like avoid these dynamics that create a situation where like the market cap of the core token discourages people from playing the game. This is no good. Like, in fact, you want the other way around. You want to make it so that like the tokenomics of the primary coin improve even more the more people that play, so that every owner of the primary token is trying to shill the game to people, not shill the primary token by itself, but the game, because it improves their bag somehow. And that's like the whole, like, that's a very, I don't think that's very difficult to achieve that, honestly. It just hasn't been implemented correctly. And you also want to, like, ideally, if you really, really make it good, you would have some scheme where it's like you can figure out how to incentivize people from other chains. Like, let's say you're on Kajira, you're on Injective, you're on whatever. And those people somehow get a benefit from playing too. Like, maybe there's like sub games and people are building dApps on their chains to relay IBC messages to like, to this system somehow. And like that, you know, supports the primary game. I don't know exactly how that would work. I don't know the technical details, but like ideally you would get the network effect of all the people in Cosmos to play, as opposed to just simply, you know, so like, how do you achieve that alignment? Do you have like, you know, is there some way to create liquid staked, you know, ownership within this chain of other chain tokens? I don't know. People have done that sort of shit.
You could also do betting. You could like do offside betting against the teams, right?
Of course. Yeah, so you can do all of those.
There could be odds on other teams, and people could do that if they wanted to play on the outside. But yeah.
All of these sort of secondary games would be just people would produce them spontaneously at that point. So if you have enough users playing the primary game, think about like baseball or football in the United States, like a bunch of people play football, and then you have like people betting on football, and then you have people playing like fantasy football. Like, there's something about the culture of football that leads to all, and then you have college football, and then you have high school football. Like, it translates into like a cultural phenomenon at that point at scale. So the primary game would, yes, lead to like different dungeon masters essentially creating secondary games on top of this that also benefit the network, ideally. I think, Lim, you were on for a bit. Did you have a question? I kind of like ignored you for a bit there.
Yeah, what's up, guys? I was just seeing how everyone felt about the Zeph. Anybody grab this dip? It's tasty as hell.
Yeah. It's a good little dip here. It's good. Because like our top was like 52, so we're at like 40 now. 20 to 30% dips in a kind of bullish market are pretty good fodder for picking some up.
Yeah, it seems very healthy.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. We want to clear some, you want to have some sellers for sure. No doubt about it. Yeah, and volume's picking up though steadily. So it's good. Like, you want miners to sell some coins. You want early entrants to sell some coins. It's fine. Because you want new people to sort of like, it's the new folks that maybe they bought at $50. They're like, oh, I bought the top. Uh-oh. And then you see it goes to 40. And okay, I'll add to my position. So there's always dip buyers. As long as there's new users coming along, the network effects grow quickly. Should be fine. I'm not worried at all.
Seeing new people join up every day.
Oh, yeah. It's like the volume's picking up on all the exchanges. So it's like there's definitely new people showing up. Plus the Telegram groups and Discord's all blowing up too. And followers.
What's the hash rate looking like now?
I think it's running like, what is it, 1.5 or something? Let me see. Let me see here.
1.67 is what I'm seeing.
Yeah, that sounds about right. So 1.67 gigahash per second. Monero is running usually around 2.5 or so. So we're approaching Monero fairly quickly, considering it's only been like 6 months or less.
Honestly, on a question on that, what's the state at which you'd be concerned? I guess, like,
meaning the hash rate's too low or what?
Yeah. Like, what's a rate at, or I guess, would you be concerned about a rate or a rate of decrease first? I guess rate of decrease would probably be concerning, but then.
You're going to see wild fluctuations in hash rate. Like, typically how proof of work networks work is that, like, if you have a big drop in the coin price, then it's not as profitable. So miners point their rigs to something else. So you'll have like definitely some like sort of parasitic miners, in that they'll show up when the price is going up. They'll mine, but they'll go mine something else because, you know, it's not as lucrative or something. So it'll go up and down a lot. I would say like probably 50% or more like volatility in hash rate would be pretty normal, I would guess here. I'm not as much of a mining expert here, but
sense, because like literally a day ago we were seeing 2.8. So like, I guess this is a question for everybody. Is
yeah, we it flipped Monero briefly. I'm not sure why that happened.
Is there a like relative change in hash rate that you guys would be concerned with between like
steady
state and minimum maximum?
I think we're well above like the amount necessary to sort of reasonably secure the network. I mean, if Monero is at 2.5 and has been running since 2014 without a problem, I think we're probably okay. I don't know. Yeah, like more individuals who hash this, the better. So individual PCs, not the mining pools. Is a better thing, obviously, for decentralization. And also the way that that RandomX works is the more people on the network and the more people using it, the more obscure the transactions become. So that's a good thing. It the privacy increases actually with more people using it.
I think like one risk, I think I haven't seen it on there. It's hard to find, but for your question about what hash rate would be dangerous, you'd have to figure out the cost of a 51% attack. So if the cost of the 51% attack drops rapidly and it's attainable, then that's the risk to any proof of work chain. But if you have a decent enough amount of miners in the difficulty set, then you don't have that issue.
Sounds good. And especially with the CPU metric that they have implemented, it's probably much harder to get to that point, right? Because I'm guessing there are probably large pools of ASCII miners, but the chances that somebody's got, I don't know, like 30,000 Ryzen 9 stacked up doing the same thing is probably pretty low.
Yeah. Also, it's like, there is an interesting piece is like there's a lot of proof of work chains out. There's Caspa and there's Bitcoin and there whatever, right? So the more of them there are, the probably the better, because then like a lot of these things will go under the radar for a while and allows like individual miners to get in, and like that helps decentralize things. But yeah, you don't really know exactly how decentralized the network is at any given moment. So there's always that kind of 51% attack risk in theory. Historically, these mining pools like Hero or whoever, nobody has done anything particularly strange. So I don't know. I haven't seen any kind of like cartels form where they try to fork the system and stuff like that.
Also, I'm guessing once like rate goes down sufficiently, people are incentivized to just leave the network entirely as opposed to try to completely obliterate it. There's probably more value to be made by going off to mine the next thing versus trying to just
eat the value out of the opportunity cost. Yeah. What's the opportunity cost of trying to attack a network? And remember, there's not that much liquidity right now. Like these are concerns for when like you have a billion plus market cap probably. Because the true exit liquidity is not very high on the exchanges. It's all just fake numbers, right? It's just nonsense.
Yeah.
For the most part.
If everyone is like, oh, I want to get out now, I'm guessing we'd go down to like by $2-3 very quickly if everyone tried to leave.
Oh yeah, there's no doubt about that. Like that's the true exit liquidity is nominal on these types of things. So like proper exit liquidity is not even there until you're like at a stabilized market cap of well over a billion with the liquidity spread across lots and lots of exchanges and a lot of trading pairs. Then you have liquidity, and especially when bot trading happens on your various coins, then there is like a buyer all the time for those for your sales, or vice versa. So yeah, it takes a while to get to that level. I'd say like you want to see you know, maybe like over a 4-year time frame, you have serious exit liquidity. So even if you're like supposedly Zephyr rich, your ability to sell any significant amount with that massive slippage is going to be pretty weak for quite a bit of time to come. So, and I think people know this, like a lot of people in this type of coin are like crypto OG type people. They're not like, they're not really new to the space. Like I haven't talked to a single person in like any of these spaces about Zeph that like is like a crypto newbie, really. And maybe there's people here, I don't know, but I haven't spoken to a lot of them. And so it's a lot of more like kind of like people that understand how this works, and they understand like market caps a bit. They understand like you really want to hold till much later typically and whatever. So we'll see. Anyway,
back to your game.
Yeah.
So like I've seen a lot of games that have been coming out that are just free to play on like Xbox or PC or whatever. And they institute ranking pools for like new players come in and they're paired against new players. How would you incentivize, or what kind of game metrics could you implement to prevent people from just creating brand new accounts constantly to come in and just wreck the new kids?
Or is brand new accounts as in like, should brand new accounts as in what? Like
I mean, like, so like, let's say with your game, whatever, you want to have it be viable for new people to come in, assuming you used a metric of new players play against new players for the first X amount of time that they play. How would you create some type of linear improvement scale? Or I guess, is that even something you'd be concerned about for implementation of new players, or would you just want them to be able to hop right in?
I don't know. My thought was like your wallet would be contain the store of value token that you want to acquire. So that would be like what I call the OM token, like OM as in like the you know, like meditation OM, you know, like the sound. So OM. And so the OM token would be like the thing that you're trying to acquire because that's worth something for whatever reason. The network is giving that coin the worth. It's the store of value for the system. And so based on how you play the game, it affects maybe something like the yield of your OM token. And so like you're incentivized sort of monetarily. And if you have 10 OM tokens, great. If you have 1,000,000 OM tokens, well, now you're really incentivized to play, aren't you? But you can't necessarily just simply have a bunch of different wallets, because those wallets won't necessarily directly benefit the OM token in your wallet. So just simply like, replicating a ton of wallets may or may not be productive for this type of thing. And we'd have to figure out how that all works, right? Like essentially like Sybil resistance is what we're talking about here. How do you set up the game to where that it doesn't make sense to have like a dozen wallets? And or does it make sense to have a dozen wallets? I don't know. We sort of want a dozen wallets, because like, what if you could get a dozen wallets together? You split your OM into 12 different wallets and you can play like different characters simultaneously. Do we want to avoid that? I don't think so. Like, remember in, I don't know if you like EverQuest or in World of Warcraft, some people like had three computers running at the same time and they just be like they have a cleric, a warrior, and a fucking like enchanter or whatever. And like, you know, the three of them could just like rampage because you have the right combo to like just level or whatever, right? Same concept here. Like, it wouldn't be bad to necessarily have like multiple characters and different wallets. The more people want to play, like, here's the thing. If your game sucked, people wouldn't want three wallets to play, right? So like anything that like discourages that, you'd have to ask yourself, well, why are you discouraging that? Like, what is your point exactly? You design the game to sort of like, you can play if you want to solo, you can play if you want to with three characters, it doesn't really matter. You could divide it up. You could like, I don't know. It's however you intend to play. That should be up to the user, I think. But none of those things should like, all transactions should benefit the primary token as far as the token economics of it, right? As opposed to hindering it somehow.
Yeah, that makes sense. But like, I guess once you get to the point of botting, then having that many, right? So like what we've seen with, I know you're not too into the NFTs, but like, from what I've seen, I just pretty much stayed away from them entirely based off the fact that botting of wallets just completely obliterates a lot of types of mints. Because let's say you get one per wallet, somebody will set up literally 10,000 wallets and then they'll all mint one for free. So like they mint let's say you have 15% mint your initial coin for free, and then they just overrun and destroy the game at the onset of the game. I mean, obviously you've got metrics put in place for long-term success, but a lot of people are coming into the game and then immediately get turned off by the fact that it got obliterated up front by people that are able to code to do that.
Yeah,
that might
sure.
be a dumb question.
It's definitely a problem with NFT platforms for sure. Yeah, that's like how to play that game theory out is like a conversation with like our friends that do NFT platforms, like Shane and others, like Stars. So there's definitely people that have built NFT platforms, which should be like good people to get advisors for something like this, because they know all the different tactics that people have utilized for like fucking with the system and ruining it somehow. My thought is like all of those tactics, like you got to figure out a way to make all of those tactics something that someone could do if they really wanted to, but wouldn't ruin the game for the person that doesn't. And that's the question. How do you accomplish that? My suspicion is that like it has to do not so much with the number of coins in your wallet, but it has more to do with the proportions of them and what your specific goal in the game is. If you have a variety of different goals, like let's say some people's goal is long term and they want to avoid like getting hit with a hurricane, maybe they buy insurance, hurricane insurance, right? Like look at think of real life. Other people like, fuck it, I don't want to get anywhere near a hurricane. I'm not living in Florida. I'm going to go live in Ohio or something. So some people like make a decision based on the weather because they don't like hurricanes, or maybe they don't like living in the cold. So they go live in Florida, but they prefer the hurricanes. So all of those kinds of things, like I think are just going to be preferences. But I don't think there's like only one way to win the game either. Like there, that's the other thing. If you create a system where it's like pure PvP, where there's only one way to win and it's you getting all the tokens, well, then obviously people are going to bot the shit out of it. If like, botting the heck out of the system doesn't really achieve very much for you. Like then there's not, you know, maybe like that's, you have to decide. I think those measures and those ideas have to be considered in every single game mechanic. Like what would a bot do here? How would I design a bot to game this setup? And, you know, is that going to make the game less fun or ruin it for everybody else? Or are those bots actually going to help? Like for example, grid bots, they extract value from a coin. Like, because trading pairs with a tether and you grid bot it, it's extracting value. But on the other hand, it provides liquidity and it provides transactions and it creates volume. And that allows people that want to exit or enter to do so without much slippage. So bots have a benefit. Like, I think the thing to do is like figure out, wait a minute, like maybe we should just build on-chain bots, like build the bots where, you know, they actually run on purpose to provide these functions. And, they're just part of the game somehow. Like they're like almost like the NPCs of the game are bots, sort of, maybe something like that. I don't know. Not really sure.
Yeah. Like that. I guess just one other idea was, so like similarly with some NFTs, they'll soul bound a separate portion or like a separate mint essentially to your wallet. So like if you had 10,000 wallets mint something with a bot, then you could soul bound something to that token that they're trying to acquire. They would follow it regardless of where it went. And that would enforce some type of metric to their preference that would then prevent them from being able to just sell it or like transfer it all to a singular wallet and then overwhelm the game from one perspective. It would soul bound it to their preference to, like, so now if they're accumulating everything that they've botted, that would hopefully it would minimize their impact on the game, because like you said, there's going to be multiple win metrics that are implemented. So then they would be de-incentivized to show their hand that up front because it would be impacted by like the random metrics in the game.
Yeah, for sure. Like, yeah, all sorts of different interesting mechanisms can be done. Like, for example, do you remember when, like, on Terra, that some of the new protocols initiated, like, lock drops? Remember that? Like, Astroport and other places. Like, so you would get a certain amount of tokens based on, like, the price would be in free fall. And, you know, whatever price you felt like buying it at, wherever you thought the bottom was going to be, you could just buy that. And that's how liquidity first entered the that ecosystem. And that was how the protocol owned its liquidity and got the protocol started. So there's definitely some lessons to be learned there as well, in terms of like what you mentioned earlier, the exponential curves, which like you don't know for sure what the other bots are going to do, and you certainly don't know what the other humans are going to do. So there is a bit of randomness anyway, no matter how you look at it. You don't know the exact bottom price or the demand for that particular thing. So yeah, there's definitely ways to sort of like make it so that a bot is not materially that much more successful than a human at defining the right wallet components. But yeah, NFTs and soulbound ideas, like, and you know, the funniest thing is some of the first games to invent the concept of soulbound were, and to tie it to a human being, one of the first was EverQuest back in like 2000. So I had won a lot of, I like had a world record eBay sale for like a character that I played on EverQuest. Like I was, our guild was at the top of the, like we were the top guild in the world at the time, Fires of Heaven. You might've heard of it if you played EQ back then, but like, it was truly like one of the legendary, like original Uber guilds of like that of all gaming. And so that was like my thing. And like, I had some of the top characters in that guild too. So like, I got all the new shit from the dragons or whatever. And I had a record breaking sale on eBay at the time for like, I don't know, it was like $5,000 or something for my character, which was a lot at that time. Because like then like eBay didn't have much of this. So what happened was, is people were like buying and selling characters. They were like buying and selling equipment. So one of the things that they did first was they made it so you couldn't trade some of the equipment. They made it soulbound so that if you killed a big dragon, it got stuck on your character. And so then what happened is people started just like, in my case, when I wanted to rage quit the game because I was like, I'm wasting too much fucking time on this thing. I sold my character so I would stop playing. And I just pocketed the $5,000, or some idiot bought the thing for $5,000. It's like, now in NFT days when people are spending like $100,000 on NFT, it seems stupid. But back then it was pretty impressive. So I sold this thing. And later what they did was they banned, eBay banned video game sales of game gold and other shit for a while. And they also made it so that you could no longer transfer your character to another credit card and with a different name. So like, if you notice now, if you go on video games, a big thing is like, you'll go on and like it's tied to your PlayStation account or your Blizzard account or whatever it is. And it is like, you know, you can't just transfer your character or your history to somebody else, because that's tied to your credit card, which is on your name or something like that, right? Unless you literally paid for that for someone else. So within a family, you could do it, but like outside, like, how are you going to do this? So that's a big thing. So soulbounding accounts, so like essentially like your wallet and soulbounding items became a thing as people like ruin the game, because like if you could just pay a bunch of money and get the same shit, like it just ruins the game for the people inside the game. So, you know, like there's pay to play. It basically becomes a pay to play type of game, where like if you have money and you're rich, you can just go buy a bunch of shit and win the game, which is not, you know, necessarily the thing to do. You don't want that to be the whole essence of the game. Here, the difference would be like you would buy the primary token of the game, like Ohm, if you believed in the ethos of it and you believed it was going to be a good store of value because of the game mechanics. And then you'd play the game because you could up your Ohm count as part of doing that, because it would affect the inflation, deflation, burn mechanism of the system and like benefit you somehow. So you might have the option to just hold the Ohm token, in which case you'd benefit from it being deflated, or you have the ability to stake the Ohm token, which would benefit from being inflated, right? So like you could play it both ways in a sense. And there's different ways to like play the game and tokenomics and stuff. But the point is like everyone that's playing the game benefits in terms of the value accrual to their primary token. It's the same thing as like owning, like, say, for example, Kujira tokens. And like the more people that play the game, the more the yield and the transaction money from the game go to the stakeholders. So like, yeah. So like on Kujira, like you're wanting people to shield the DeFi ecosystem or Ethereum or whatever, or Arbitrum. You're interested in more users to come. Why? Because like you own the basic token and it benefits you indirectly. And the more it benefits you directly, the more likely you are to have other people help play the game with you. But like, you know, a game that's really simple that you only have to log into two or three times a day, make a few adjustments to your wallet. This is something you could tell your friends about, because like imagine you can join the game very, very cheaply and easily. Maybe with like, you know, you throw a few Atom or something in your wallet, you're up and on your way. And that Atom brings liquidity to the system. So you don't need to find another liquidity token to a DEX and all that shit. You don't even have to spend money listing DEXs and stuff. Like none of that shit's necessary. All you do is you say, okay, you're going to bring Atom in. You're going to use that as your like gas token or whatever. And now you can play the game to do all the transactions as a universal gas token. And then what you can do is like all of that activity leads to ultimately the value of the Atom that comes in the system to go into the primary token of the game. And so that's kind of how it would work. And so Atom gets locked up, the Ohm gets locked up, and then you almost like, you know, you sort of like you may share some of the like the value accrual mechanism somehow, right? So like there's different things you could do, but like you could also have gas tokens that could become from a variety of C ecosystems. Like maybe you can bring in like Kuji tokens, or you can injective tokens or whatever. Who cares? Like whatever the point is, like you can easily hook up a Kepler wallet or something, transfer the tokens that are needed to get the job done, and now you're up and running, and it just doesn't take much effort. So like onboarding should really be ideally very, very simple. And maybe like, and you almost always have to have some fee attached to transactions, otherwise you wind up with the wrong type of bots, which is spam, and you want to keep the spam down, obviously, like otherwise your system gets bogged down by bullshit. So yeah, there definitely has to be a fee to play in a sense, or fee to transact. And that fee should be sufficient to like prevent people from wrecking the system, basically. So otherwise it's fun for nobody. So yeah, all games have to be pay to play at some level, but you don't want to have it such that it's a pay to win. You should be able to feel like you can win the game, whatever it is, or exceed or excel in the game without being rich. Because sometimes there's really good people that are like great at building guilds, but they're poor as fuck in real life, right? Like, you know, you don't want to have like some kid who's an amazing guild master who can't like enjoy the game because like, you know, he doesn't have much money. Like that's no good. So yeah, like I remember like the guild master for Fires of Heaven and EverQuest actually became a lead developer at Blizzard for World of Warcraft. Actually, my character name from EverQuest is all over World of Warcraft, actually. Like you wouldn't know it unless I told you, but then it's like I don't want to be doxxed for like whatever. But the point is, like, it was funny because the guy knew me and he used a lot of the character names from his, you know, former guild to stick into the like video game of World of Warcraft for the NPCs. So like one of the dragons or some shit had the name of one of my characters from EverQuest in it, one of the dragons on World of Warcraft that roamed the wilderness or some shit. So it's kind of funny. One day I went and played World of Warcraft after years. I'm like, I want to check this out. I got the itch to play RPGs, and I go in there. I'm like, holy fuck, they use my name. Like, and I knew it wasn't coincidence because I knew the guy. Like, he became like a lead a game design guy at Blizzard at the time. It's very funny. He still follows me on Facebook. We periodically like, so it's kind of funny like that. But yeah, like the idea is like, you build these networks and you build these groups of people together, and you know, that's like anything. It's like it becomes its own social network to some extent. So yeah, but the difference here is that the explicit purpose is to improve the decentralization of the core network and improve the value accrual mechanism of the core token so that everyone has fun. And it's part of the, like, all the Ponzinomics of the traditional crypto need to be there, right? Like every Ponzinomic that you can think of, every MLM, every Ponzi scheme, every pyramid scheme, every game theoretic mechanism you can imagine, you want to try to like game that out and include that in the process is kind of how I'm thinking about this. And I think everyone knows this, like from a like network growth perspective, you need every sociologic and psychologic element you can incorporate to get there. And a lot of video games try to do this, of course. Like, but the thing of most video games you'll notice is that like the participants get bored after a while and stop playing. Whereas if you look at something like Bitcoin, you have hodlers who want to hold that shit forever, right? Like, how do you get that to happen here? And not just simply have people get bored of the game. And even if they got bored of the game, maybe they're interested in buying the primary token of the game because they don't give a fuck whether or not if the network is more secure than other networks because of the game participants, they don't give a shit about playing the game. They just want to own the token. And that's the magic of this, because that ultimately benefits all other token holders. And when other token holders are happy, they play more of the game and they bring more of their friends to play, right? You've seen DeFi. Look at any average DeFi market cap and see it go up. See how the TVL goes up. That's how this happens. It's that simple. So I'm just sort of like, if DeFi was an abstraction, in a sense, like, I'm just calling it for what it is. Just call it a video game and be done with it. That's all DeFi really is. Like, what do you think you're doing there with your little tokens and trading a bunch of bullshit? Like, that's what it is, just a video game. Like, and that's fine. And it's pretty cool. But yeah, that's the theory anyway. But Ferry, I don't know if you've been taking some mental notes and you have time to sort of like pull together some people to do this, it'd be fun to put something together for sure.
I've been working on something similar for like a while. So like the IBC and stuff, like I get it. I know exactly what you need, what you want. It's obviously just I've been sorting out a few things with my life, personal reasons. Like by January, we should be ready to go, I guess. But yeah, like everything seems like it makes perfect sense to me. I kind of understand the dynamics that you want. And yeah, let's see what happens.
Yeah, because I don't exactly know the precise design. It's like I'm thinking of it from just like a high level view. And the concept is like getting into the weeds with what's possible and what is not, like what is going to be attacked, what isn't. Those kinds of nuances, like I don't have enough expertise in. I have a feel for like what needs to be built, big idea wise, and I don't mind sharing it. Like you can see, like I don't give a fuck if anyone's recording this, and like actually, like in fact, the space recorded. Someone wants to build it, go right ahead. I'm just like I'm interested in playing that game, and I think like I have some theories based on like my sort of knowledge of DeFi and like participating in these systems and using bots and different things. Like I have some concept of what users want, what like crypto diehards want, what gamers want. And I think I have a sense of the incentives, and like having a more of a medical background, I sort of understand people as far as like a little bit of psychology and these and sociology, these types of things. So like, I think I have like the mind to sort of put it together and like direct that kind of thing. You know, and like maybe create some of the base layer of it, but at the same time, the technical stuff, like I could do the technical shit. I just like, it's just not the thing that I enjoy the most of, or that I have the, like some sort of high level genius in or something. So I could learn it, but I think it's better to like leave that to people who know what they're doing, who don't like starting from scratch. And it doesn't make sense if you have folks that actually do this a lot anyway, but like a team of folks could be interesting to put together. But I do think this is one of those things where it's like you don't want to have like, you know, it needs to be like an organic group of teams that like is not worried about getting paid, is not worried about like getting a free bag, doesn't want any kind of like launch of tokens and other bullshit. I think the reality is you create a system that like attracts value to the network, and by being the alpha is that because you built it, you have a pretty good concept of how it works. Like, and the alpha is like, you're going to get rich no matter what anyway. So it doesn't really matter like whether whether you're given team allocations or not. Because I think if you've ultra fair launched this thing and like the development happens like really pro bono, and then once the system running, you don't have a lot of maintenance of the system, that it just runs, then that would be really good. So that it's easy to validate for that network, and it's not like an expensive thing. It's not an expensive project to keep going, because you don't want to have a lot of ongoing maintenance costs and stuff. Ideally, that's my thinking. Like, you know, core BTC team is not coming up with something new every week to change the system, right? And so that becomes an inexpensive, very inefficient thing. And then like dApps and different things people want to build on top of it, dashboards and all the fun shit, maybe bridges to bring in, or like IBC, channels to bring in value from other chains or whatever. That's something that people can build if they feel like it, if they think it's worth it. Because usually if you build something great, like a lot of other smart people will show up and help build with it and have fun on it and stuff like that. So typically you get like if you have a technically elegant solution, you'll find technically elegant people to join up with you and do shit. Like that's what I've discovered in this space, like generally. So I think it's like a build it and they will come type of philosophy if it's good enough. Anyway, so like...
So everybody just DM Seffy and give him your Atom address so he can waitlist you Everybody's heard it right here. The pre-sale is coming out in January. This is the fucking alpha. This is the alpha that everybody's been waiting for today. Now the space can be closed.
Exactly. Hold on. I think there's a couple of questions and then we can break anyway. Anne, what's up?
Hello, Sefi. Hey, Fairy. Nice to see you on the space.
You're gonna play the fairy game or what?
Oh yes, of course. Okay, cool. Yes, but I want to add something. Like, okay, so for example, now this Ceph coin token or project, whatever you would call it, it's hyping because there are you are holding spaces every day. Bruce is involved, like Oxeus, whatever, some other, well, people with big accounts and big voices. So I think, don't you think that it's also like very difficult to get in these, how do you attract people? How do you get people aware of your project? How do you attract?
Yeah, that's a good question. Like, I think for one thing, like if the system is like technically sexy enough, what will happen is like technically savvy people will start playing and getting involved fairly early. Because they'll hear about it and be like, oh shit, I want to get in that. Like similar to how I got into like Zephyr Protocol, the protocol seems pretty sexy. So I'm like, all right, I'm in it. Like, and it's fun to talk about because like the technical implications are very cool. So yeah, if you have a project that's like interesting enough that people like, ooh, I can explain that, it's interesting, then they'll tell their friends and stuff. So that part of it is like, you know, what is the narrative? Like, why are you building this and why is it fun? Or why is it meant to be entertaining? Is it meant to make you money? Like what is the goal? So if you can define that clearly, you know, like, and it's like other people are excited about it, then they'll tell their friends. So yeah, how viral can something become is really important. You know, is this a project you'd sell two friends about, five friends about, you'd tell everyone in the universe about? Like what is the level of virality we're talking about? You know, that's something to consider.
But what I was trying to say is like, so there will always come people in your space, Sefi. There will always come people in Bruce's space, and VBS Rocker Trader, whatever, King Wobby. There will always come people in their spaces. And if you don't have the connections, like, so to say, like ask them, oh, can you come in my space because I want to like get people aware of this project, then it doesn't work. How many projects didn't fail because they didn't get attract as many people?
Yeah,
as
there's no doubt that like attention is expensive, right? Like it takes time and effort to get that, no question about it. Like, and you don't get these kind of like follower accounts and stuff like by just sitting around doing nothing. It takes time and effort, as you've seen. Like I chat all day or whatever, and then people show up. So yeah, there's an element of you have to generate that network. And a lot of projects, what it is like they know how to build something, but they don't know how to market it, or they know how to market it, but they don't know how to build something. So there's always like this disconnect. And then it gets really weird when like there's a project and they hire people to market for them, and that just seems very inorganic. And feels kind of scammy, you know. So it's like typically in the so-called Web3 experience, it's like, you know, people buy their bag and they're like so excited about it for whatever reason that we have a space about it. So that's pretty much how it works. Like, it's usually a mixture of like someone that an advocate that really likes that project, and an advocate that puts a substantial amount of money in it where like they believe in it. Number one, so that's why they're putting money in it. But two, they actually believe it enough to tell their friends and whatever about, like, and to get all hit all those points requires a special project. Just not all projects are going to reach that. And you know what? Maybe there's great projects out there that I don't know about. In fact, I'm sure there are. Then it's up to them to come convince me that it's amazing. And for whatever reason, like there's only so much attention I have to go check everything. Right. So it is difficult.
And Sefi, if Fairy comes up with an blending idea, and he totally worked it out, and it's really amazing. And would you like pay some attention to it? Like, would you do that, or is that a stupid question? This is probably an awkward question. Yeah, I mean, I shouldn't have asked.
Anyone I know has ideas. Like, well, people bounce stuff off me all the time. They're like, hey, what do you think of this? Is it going to work? I don't know. And I'll just tell them my opinion about it, and vice versa. So I don't have a problem checking out anybody's thing especially if I know somebody, you know. Like, I think it's genuinely useful to make friends on Twitter. I don't think I'm pretty mm-hmm. genuine about that. It's not like I just hear for like clout or whatever. Like, I think it's fun. Okay. Like, I think it's fun making mm-hmm. friends on here. I like chatting with people, whatever. Like, and people have good ideas too. Like, I wouldn't even be in Zephyr over here if it wasn't for Up telling me the other day, oh, get yourself some Zephyr. It's pretty interesting. I'm like, oh, really? And exactly. I'm like, why? And he explained it to me. I'm like, oh, okay, that sounds interesting. So then I checked it out, and that's that. Like, otherwise, why would I be buying Zeph? I have no idea what it is otherwise. Like, someone had to tell me. So mm-hmm. same thing, like, and Up doesn't have a gigantic following. He just happens to know me, and he said, hey, by the way, you got to look at this thing. I'm like, oh, okay, let's see. And that's how I found out. But like, I didn't like early mine it. I don't own it from like the very, very first day it came out or anything like that. I don't know any of the people that made it, or like, I wasn't even on the Discord or the Telegram and all that. It's just mostly just Up just told me here on Twitter Spaces. We were talking about just some bullshit, and he just said, oh, you got to check this out. And I don't even know why that one day I'm like, I'm going to pay attention to Up this time, you know, because like a lot of people say, oh, buy this and buy that. You don't pay attention every time someone says to buy something either, right? Mm-hmm. So your attention is expensive generally, like everyone's attention is. And normally in like the regular world, you know, people like want to sell you a product. They advertise on Google or on TV or on, you know, on YouTube or something, right? That's all very expensive advertising. So like in this space, we try to go with more like human to human advertising and like word of mouth and whatever, right? So like, and then, you know, and then how convincing you are matters too, because like if someone's not very convincing tells me, oh, you should get this, I'm like, okay, why? I'm like, what am I doing with it? Their ability to explain it to me in explicit terms usually helps me decide if I'm gonna mess with it or not. And also mm-hmm. like there's a function of trust too. Like if I know someone's pretty smart about this sort of thing, then I'm more likely to just ape into it because they said so, right? Like, so if Up tells me, he's in like mining and stuff, if he tells me, oh, all the Monero miners are talking about this thing and doing it and blah, 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 I'm like, huh, there must be onto something. I don't know the first thing about it, but you know what? Like, if it's got a hash rate that high, something's going on. And I'm like, whatever, I'm just going to buy some. So like, sometimes it's just who you know and who you trust. That's it. Like, yeah, I don't have time to research that, you know. I didn't read the damn GitHub for this thing, and you know, like, I can't tell you everything is good or bad about it for sure.
No, but you know, actually, everything is about having connections in a certain way, like having connections. And for example, you can build something absolutely astonishing, but you don't have the ability to sell it for some reason. So
yeah,
you
talk about this a lot in the last 30 yeah. years or whatever, like, you know, or the lifetime of technology, there's a graveyard of junk that people created that's amazing that no one ever bought. Like a lot of stuff, like a lot of computer technologies, a lot of software, Nokia, you know, like there's a tons of stuff that like came and went along the way, right? Like, so certainly possible for just like empires for things to, you know, come and go. Yeah, but there is something magical about getting like a Bitcoin like adherence. And I think it's feasible within game theory to get there. I don't think Bitcoin has to be the only credibly decentralized system on the planet. In fact, my suspicion is that widespread use of AI and decentralized AI systems will result in a separate new decentralized network that's completely separate from the internet entirely. Like AIs themselves talking to other AIs itself is a whole nother world that we're about to build. And we haven't even like begun to imagine what that looks like, but it's going to be gigantic. I know that for sure. And it's probably going to dwarf the internet. And in fact, my suspicion is AI will be the primary consumer of electricity on this planet before too long, like even more so than humans. Like, so what's going to end up happening is like even BTC network is going to be dwarfed by AI networks. It's going to happen for sure. Like the power of thought, like the power of intellect or thought or just the processing of information is a very, very like strong basis for very, very powerful networks that people are willing to pour a lot of money into. So like, I suspect like the new Bitcoin or the, sorry, I accidentally muted everybody. the new Bitcoin will most likely be, like whenever that emerges, will be like AI driven more than likely, like a new monetary system based on thought, the power of thought and the cost of thoughts. So like there are examples of this, like Akash and Flux Network, who are basically trying to like, you know, tie a token to like cloud computing and things like that. But I do think that can be taken to a deeper level where right now, you know, when Bitcoin hashes take place, it's to secure the network and reward the miners. But like a deeper thing would be like, you know, your hashes actually do something. Right now, they don't do anything outside that core utility. But if the hashes actually power, say, AI thought processes or something like that, or computing cycles, right, that could form the basis for an entirely new economic world, especially when like robots and AI become like the primary consumer. Like they will have their own damn token structure, I promise you. Like you won't even be able to control them at some point. If you build enough AIs, especially in a decentralized fashion like we're doing now, and you keep connecting them to each other, they're going to have a monetary system that emerges emergently, almost surely, right? So like, and maybe they use Bitcoin, maybe they don't. Like, I would suspect they want a privacy coin for that purpose. Like who wants to have their adversaries know all of their thoughts? So I think privacy monetary systems are much more probable to be the next thing for information transfers. So like the Moneros of the world and all the technology that came about with like privacy crypto, I think we're just cutting the surface of that. And yeah, so these are the kind of features that I think about. So like even the Zephyr system, for example, seems sexy to me for these reasons. I think they've taken some of the best of Monero and like given people what they want, which is a convenient splash of stablecoin in the ecosystem that's really over-collateralized, very capital inefficient, but so what? Because you don't need very much stablecoin. You only need enough to do some transactions, convert your primary asset, and then you can do so privately. There's a benefit to that. And that benefit is to a certain group of people right now, but that group of people is going to get larger and larger as CBDCs and AI and shit come into play. You're going to want your privacy tokens. I promise you that. Like you're going to want to be able to hide if necessary. Yeah, it's a pretty scary world that's emerging. So a lot of things are happening. Anyway, but yeah, there's the, and to your point, like getting to these systems where, you know, how do you get people to know what's important about something? It just takes a lot of time. Like it takes a generation to get people to understand these things. And even then, most people won't. Like how long has computer programming been around? What proportion of the actual human race actually knows how to program a computer? Very few. Right, like a small percentage of the total. So most of the complexity gets abstracted away. Right now, these systems are fairly complicated, and there's so many of them, you don't know which one's good and which one's useful. There's like thousands of projects, and only some of them are going to end up being useful. Or maybe they're useful, but not get adopted because they couldn't generate enough activity. That's why I bought a lot of Chainlink, by the way. Like Chainlink tokens, like all the shit that the Chainlink system does now, they've added a lot of stuff. And those things are going to be interesting to banks and institutions and people that want to do real world assets and all sorts of stuff. So like a gigantic system had to be built to move, say, for example, real estate. Real estate title transactions. If you were going to have all the title companies in the United States convert over to some blockchain system, you need to create a gigantic, very robust system of oracles for that to work. And so like when I see that there's only one company that's actually credibly doing that in a way that's like possibly even happen, then I'm like, all right, I'm going to buy some of their token, right? So like I'm gambling on that. So yeah, there's definitely some things that do cool shit, but like look at the crypto economy. Most people don't know what Chainlink does. And no matter how many times you say it, they still don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Like, so the price of the token tends to underperform what it actually does oftentimes. So that's the other weird thing is like, just because the price of a token doesn't go up doesn't mean it's not great tech. And just because great tech doesn't mean the price of the token goes up or it gets adopted. There's always this gulf in between of like, and so like the educators, the shillers or the threadors or whatever, like all these people are the ones that make these adoption things happen. Like Bitcoin didn't adopt itself. I mean, I must have posted shit like hundreds of thousands of posts on I don't know what platforms to get BTC to where it is now. If you think that shit got there by itself, you don't have any fucking clue how much chilling that shit took, man. Being called a scammer for a quarter century or whatever. Fuck that, man. Like, you know what I mean? Like it's just ridiculous how long it took, right? Like, it's like, it's a very funny thing. But yeah, like, it's like, you know, this whole ecosystem is very funny, but like, you learn a lot of lessons in it. It's a lot of fun. Yeah, 8 bytes. You have a comment or anything else?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I just wanted to say, I finally got Zeph. A few things actually kind of got me to finally say, okay, I'm going to buy a bit. But you know, with CRI, it looks like they're kind of interested in picking up ZSD. Just based off like Discord.
What does CRI do?
It's a Thorchain fork essentially, but it's it's targeting specifically like privacy coins, like Monero. Monero is actually the main one that they're focused on right now. They're not launched yet, and I mean, I tried to work on Monero wallet integration for Thorchain, and it's going to take a while. There's a lot of like issues when it comes to working with Deged and essentially how Thorchain monitors transactions, right? So it's hard to prove solvency there.
Are the Sarai people anonymous too? I hope.
Yeah, they're anonymous. Okay. And then like another thing that I was looking at was Black Protocol, and I was actually looking in between what Haven was doing way back when, before, you know, whatever things happened with them, and there's a good chunk of tech already written out. It's just really solving like those big problems, and I was like looking at it all and just thinking, you know, in the longer term of things, right? If I just own like a few of these tokens and a lot of this infrastructure gets up, I mean, well, then it has a really valuable use case, right? If I can, like, let's just say,
oh yeah, if you can
BTC, right?
Yeah,
BTC,
you can swap to other things, like either anonymously or whatever. I mean, like, and it's unstoppable. It's truly decentralized, and like, and the teams can't be censored. Then yeah, you've got the makings of some cool shit for sure,
right? And I mean, quite honestly, when it comes to privacy stables, right, it is just at this point, it is really just Haven and XUSD, which is DPEG right now, and ZSD, right? So you don't even have many options if you're trying to look for it, essentially like an anonymous Bitcoin spot market. So I mean, if that's in the potential future pipeline, that's kind of where I'm looking at. Okay, well, that's how we get like the other 10x or 20x or something from there.
Yeah, I think the ability to like trade it on different places, especially anonymously, like it'll get a lot of traction then.
Yeah, I mean, like, that was pretty much... Oh, and just another thing, how you were talking about AI. But funny enough, I mean, BitTensor just made a subnet for ZK proofs, essentially exactly how you were describing it, right? But a lot of the times with what's happening on that network, you know, model weights end up getting passed down with full visibility. So let's say you're a miner there, and it's competitive mining. It works similar to GPT-4. I don't know if you know how GPT-4 works, but it's essentially like a group of experts. So when you submit your query to it, right, it actually has multiple smaller models that generate answers, and then it then selects like the best, or it aggregates like the best possible answer from that. And essentially what BitTensor is doing is similar when you check out like the GPT-based subnet, like 1 or 11. But a lot of people, right, with that AI domain specific knowledge, well, they don't really want to give out a lot of their information, right? They'd like to be able to perform the processing and computation, but obviously without giving out the value that they did, like either if it was fine tuning or, you know, maybe like model tweaks. And so with a ZK layer there to actually abstract the computation or essentially the AI work, and make that essentially
concealed or private. I mean, honestly, like that's exactly what you were talking about, right? And then stable currency, right? That's what Tau is. It's exactly that type of currency for that AI based computation. So, you know, just wanted to point that out. That's, you pretty much hit the ball on it.
Yeah, there's all sorts of little like information transfer protocols being developed like that. Just computational layers through like Celestia, for example, and there's like data availability, and there's other things you can do where you can do computation elsewhere and stuff. All sorts of interesting things are happening. I don't know how this like plays out and whether humanity's any better for it, though. That's the only trouble. Like, here's the thing, like the more of these things you connect AI and robots to, like the less control of all that shit you have, and the machines just sort of like do shit, and you can't really like chain reactions of things start occurring, and it's like it's an interesting global system, but I'm not entirely sure it's net positive for humans. Like, I'm not sure I fully agree with the accelerationist that we'll just be fine. Like, I'm somewhere in the middle as far as like, I think it's there's a possibility for, yes, a lot of good positive things to happen, but also a lot of very bad things to happen too, and I'm not so sure how equipped the human race is to handle a lot of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think just since we're stuck in a capitalist paradigm, and I'm not against or for capitalism, but it is what it is, right? I think since we're in that, it's obviously going to lean towards what creates the most profit, which would be obviously, you know, maximizing the use of AI, since that's productivity, and you spend like a kilowatt hour energy on it. I mean, that beats getting a person a house, right? Space to like think, food to eat, cars and gas to get to work. So I mean, it's not going to slow down.
Yeah, agreed. Like, I think there's a certain inevitability to it. Certainly, like, no doubt about that. I'm just not sure it's a net benefit yet. I don't think it matters, because it doesn't seem like we have a choice either way. To some extent, like, these things are being built one after the other, yeah, in terms of automation systems. So, I mean,
you work in medical, so you obviously know how much is being built in terms of biosciences.
Like, I trained, I did my first robotic operation on lungs just last about a week ago. So I trained how to, you know, use the robot and biopsied a person's lung with it. Worked out really well. But yeah, that's definitely like, more and more robotic stuff, more and more electronics things. Radiology has a lot of patents involved for detecting tumors and whatever. So yeah, tons and tons of stuff coming down the pike. This next 10 years are going to be very different from the prior 10. I can tell you that right now, like, as far as like how everyone's jobs and everyone's lives are affected. I think in general, like, it'll probably be a net positive in the shorter term. In the longer term, as far as like human-human interactions, I'm not sure that's going to be the case. We'll have to see. It depends on how they're designed, because like, the problem is like most of these systems are designed to like maximize value extraction from the user, or like, you know, provide sort of utility to the user and basically do so to try to make money. So the thing is like, a capitalist system basically built around an alien AI benefits the alien AI more than it does you. Like, for example, the ants on the planet aren't really benefited through capitalism humans, right? So like the thing is like, these things are going to be built more for AI and robot optimization than human, I think, over the long run. So our needs and what we care about is going to be very much secondary, is my general sense of what's going on right now. Like, every system I've seen so far seems to point to that direction. Like, I'm not seeing a lot of examples to the contrary necessarily in the grand scheme.
Well, like, yeah, I was this Joe Rogan podcast, and I forgot who he had on, but they were discussing about like these AI systems, and the speaker was just talking about how eventually it'll get to a point where, you know, you instruct an AI system to just generate revenue, right? And it'll basically find, or I guess like optimize and tune itself to generating revenue, and then essentially, because it can create that revenue, it's able to fund its own infrastructure and stuff and just continue going. So I mean, like, things like that are going to be pretty scary, and I can only imagine how.
No, you can do that now. You can just basically bot trade you know, and value extract things in DeFi and have that funnel into whatever system you want. As and then that can be like, yeah, so you can automate these things a lot more than you think already.
Right. I was quite extensive. Thinking of like things like being like YouTubers or even drop shipping, like a lot of these other minor markets, right, that a lot of people make a living off of. They're going to just end up being fully replaced by AI because, well, I mean, if it's self-sufficient and easy enough, right, then why wouldn't you do it?
Yeah, there's going to be like, you know how this is going to go, like, there's going to be a manual for how to, you know, work your toaster, and the AI is going to read the manual for the toaster, and it's going to like create a step-by-step instructions of how to use the toaster and create a YouTube video for it. And then like, you know, and then have referral links to Amazon or whatever, all in one.
Yeah.
Thing. Or like it has the VR information or AR information to just let you repair the toaster or whatever. That's all coming too. So like, you know, the CAD file for the you know, DWG file or whatever, like the CAD file is all incorporated in, and so is the, you know, and so it can render itself an image of a thing and show you pictures of how it took it apart and everything else. It's going to be pretty impressive. Like there's a lot of things that we do now that are going to be like modified. Like, so for example, today, like a plumber has to get very, very specifically certified or understand a specific device, like let's say a boiler or something. And maybe it requires a special level of expertise because it's not a common one. But later you're going to put on your little AR glasses or whatever. And next thing you know, like that company's already put together an instruction set. You talk to the glasses, say, oh, like it's making this sound. It's like, okay, the problem is probably this. Or you just turn, you know, go near the thing. It's making the noise. It hears it. And okay, that's this valve. It needs to be fixed, right? So like, and it will show you how to fix it and which parts to take apart, what parts to order. Maybe it just orders the parts for you. I don't know. But the point is like, it's going to be very, very, it's going to be a very much a Jarvis-like system from what all the stuff I've seen.
Yeah. And we're just close. Like it with the yeah. Meta Quest 3, right? I mean, good OCR and, or, you know, just computer vision attached with a sufficient enough language model. And like, really, there you go. I mean, that's just putting
up and running
together.
Not to mention, like, remember we had companies for a while. It was like, okay, you have to be web first. Remember that? Like you have to have a website for your company. Then it became mobile first. You had to have, more important was everyone's using smartphones. So you got to have a mobile first application for your company. It's not the website. And then not only that, but your website had to be mobile optimized. And now next step is going to be like, is your company AI optimized? Is it VR optimized? Is it AR optimized? And, you know, which platform are people using the most? And therefore we got to specify that first. Which system are doctors training on most? Is it Apple Vision? Okay, we got to optimize that shit then, you know? So yeah, companies are going to have to keep having to pivot for the new platforms for sure. And like, yeah, if like, which company are you going to prefer to buy your car from? The one that tells you with the glasses how to, you know, change your oil, or are you going to get the one that doesn't do that, right? So like, companies will differentiate themselves based on the offerings as far as like, you know, what the instruction manual actually looks like, for example, or like how easy it is to maintain yourself because now you can be your own mechanic or something. So yeah, all of those things are going to, all of that's going to happen. Like, no doubt about it. Like people are working on all of those things I just mentioned, basically. So it's like what we haven't seen is it come into mainstream yet, but pretty cool stuff. Yeah, even the surgical robot that I used is pretty impressive. Like I can imagine how that same tech can basically be used for lots of different types of robotics later. So yeah, if like you almost assuredly can get to the point where robots are washing your dishes and shit. You know what I mean? Like that's very much doable. You know, loading up the dishwasher and putting them away and all that kind of stuff. So I do think like Elon Musk is onto something with the like humanoid robots, because ultimately I think most people are going to own one car and maybe one robot instead of two cars. That's highly probable because just how much utility you get from them. And maybe you'll have one car that you own. It has self-driving capability. You have another car that maybe roams the neighborhood and picks up people and drops them off at things. And you can just like pay for them like a roving Uber. And then maybe that money you save, because now you don't own two cars and you don't have to have an extra garage bay. Now you have a robot instead and you paid for that instead of a big garage and a thing. So like, yeah. Like there's a good chance that like the three car garage or whatever in America becomes obsolete, like, cause you won't need that many cars basically. Should be interesting. Yeah. Lots happening, but you definitely will, like, if you look 50 years from now, the world will most definitely look very different than you're thinking that it looks like today, for sure. anyway, I think we'll get going. It's been a fun day. Had kind of a day off and just chilling today. But I'll catch you guys all later.
It's been good, yeah. Nice speaking again.
Yeah.
And I mean, honestly, just keep an eye out for Zef and ZSD. I'm already going to arbitrage what I got, so.
Yeah.
Like, there'll be some might as well, stuff. Right? Put it to work. Yeah.
We pick up what we can. It'd be fun. Cool.
Thanks, Zef. See you later.
Milo, see you later. And cheetah. Later, guys. Bye.
Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of trash is under the dirt. We rape them under the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play. Ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Motherfuckers walking around here looking faceless, trying to make a living selling friendship bracelets. Dead ends dragging out the max amount of payments. Red down days got them acting all bankless. Yo fam, what? Check these tokenomics. They probing this bear, flexing broken honest. I had to lay my soul down, I'm just roasting otters. And then to end a long day, 11 bowls of chronic. Never known a politic, I was born to frolic. It's been my policy to pollinate all over the plot. We got a lot of apologists jumping in at the top. We like to measure their velocity before they hit rock bottom. Over impossible loss, it's all moss, and I'm liking the odds. Fondue in the morning, forming mycological bonds. Flick the cap, yo, the road is highly involved. Flip a coin, diary fall. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape and plunder the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play. Ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Trying to figure out the max amount of dinner lay stacked in non-toxic just to get a better place. Smacking on the hostage like the shit is play for keeps. Clowns, white knight, and all these Maybellines. They call it implausible when model after model keeps on ripping off the coat and going full throttle. Eats tearing apart your community. All these low hanging fruits bearing zero liquidity. Got a planet in reach, coming standard to each. I'm on the back 10 stargazing after the siege. Commanding all the management to grab a few seats, and then we'll round up the beasts and send a messenger east. Y'all better sign a release when I'm bumping these beats. Hands up if I got motherfuckers drumming the streets. Yo, we got a few dubs, we got a couple defeats, and if you're coming for the king, you better have some of each. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape and plunder the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play. Ring around the rosy while the thunder is served.
Channel Spaces.